Okay. So, linear algebra. Who's taken an undergraduate linear algebra course? Anybody? Okay. Majority, perhaps. Not everyone claims to have taken one. This course is intended as a second course in linear algebra. And that's why it's a graduate course, not an undergraduate course. It's possible to take such a thing at the undergraduate level. Our textbook is from some series called Undergraduate Texts in Mathematics. Now, has anybody here taken two linear algebra courses? Two. Did you take numerical linear algebra? Okay. All right. So that's not this. So this is not redundant. This is abstract linear algebra. The idea is to understand what's going on. And this course is not on doing lots of big matrix computations. The idea is to understand the structure of these things. So, for example, let's see here. If you look at the student learning outcomes, like analyze written proof to problems and theorems in linear algebra, e.g., for example, spectral mapping theorem for linear transformations. So there's a bunch of concrete things that become abstracted, right? And in these proofs, to really gain an understanding of something, it's not so helpful to human understanding if, oh, I did this huge computation, and look, it all worked out. You would like something a little more conceptual. Huh? Something that, okay, I can tell you why it's true, you know, for these reasons. You know. And it's not some super long argument, ideally. Sometimes it has to be long, but you would like something where you can understand why. So, you won't need a calculator for this course. The idea is to do things at a graduate level. We're doing abstract mathematics. So, I'd like you to have a good understanding of some things that maybe you'll use them computationally, but once you understand what's going on behind them, like, has anybody heard of the singular value decomposition? SVD? Okay. That's something we'll cover in this course. It's an advanced topic that is not covered in a typical undergraduate course. It's very useful in the real world for data analysis. Basically, you want to grab some high-dimensional data set and identify, you know, say, the two or three most important dimensions of the data, so to speak, right? Get two or three summary measures that capture most of the interesting stuff about the data. So what you grab are the what are called the two or three singular vectors with the largest singular values, as they're called. It's a generalization of eigenvectors and eigenvalues for non-square matrices. And I'm not going to teach you, okay, here's here's how we compute this. You know, anybody can compute an SVD in MATLAB. You know, just read the manual. I want you to understand things like, you know, what is a singular value decomposition? What's the geometric intuition behind it? That's an example of the way we're going here. One of the things we'll talk about today, just introducing the basics, are the quintessential finite-dimensional vector spaces. Maybe I'll put them on that. And then, of course, we will talk about their abstraction. If not today, we'll definitely get to it second class day, Thursday. And yeah, I mean, you can extend this list with lots of other things. You can have an explicit list of numbers, right? And then, of course, you can have abstract vectors, right? That may not be represented by a list, right? They could be infinite lists or functions. Lots of possibilities there. Place I remember the singular value decomposition coming up in the real world. When I was just starting out in grad school, I remember Netflix did this prize. They wanted somebody to improve their recommendation system by 10% or more. So they'd take a bunch of people's ratings of movies and write as a big long list of numbers, how many stars did they give for each of these movies, right? And the 90% of the improvement that people found was using a singular value decomposition. Just grab the largest singular value, essentially grab the largest eigenvalue is the rough idea. Does everybody know what an eigenvalue is? Okay. All right, so I'm alluding to something. We will cover eigenvalues. Don't worry. So. That's some things. I wanted to something fun here. See if I can turn that projector on. I think I can. I don't know if you all are going into big quantitative fields or if you're just going to be math teachers or what. Or if you're going to be an abstract mathematician like me. But what I don't want to happen is, this kind of thing. Playing around with a bunch of numbers and somebody tells you, okay, do this, this, and this to the data represented by the vectors or whatever. And then, it magically works. I want you to understand at least the linear algebra part very well, so it's not a mystery to you.
whether you're going to work with data in the near future or not.
I think it's easier to teach yourself a programming language, say, than to teach yourself linear algebra.
Your experience may differ, but things with programming language and lots of specific technical things like that, they keep changing as technology and fashion change. But linear algebra
has centuries to it, right? So you learn linear algebra, it'll be good and useful a century from now. You learn Python.
I like Python, but I don't know if that programming language will be good a century from now. Right? So I don't know if it'll be good for my whole career. Linear algebra,
it's timeless. Okay. So we're going to start with very basic stuff, and it'll ramp up. So we'll see how far we get today.
My intent is to talk about some stuff from sections in the book. The third page here is the schedule page. It's on the web page. So. You go to dkmj.org. That's my personal website. I'm just posting a bunch of stuff there.
I take pictures of the board. I record what I'm saying. I put that stuff there too.
Anyhow, you want to click the link for 5306, right? That's our course number. This is one thing I put in the syllabus, right?
There's a schedule of reading, so
if you come in here cold, right,
with no preparation, then the level at which we can talk to each other is, here. But if you come in and you've read the assigned reading, then we can have a much higher level of discussion. Right? You can ask more interesting questions.
I can give more interesting answers because I don't have to fill you in on everything in the section. So if we both
read those textbook sections before class, we can do more. Right? I read the whole book back in June. Okay, so I have some preparation with me already, but I'm going to have to reread the sections as we go through the semester to reacquaint myself with all the details.
And I want you to read them with me. Keep up that way. So, okay, if you don't have the book yet, just get it as soon as you can. Right? It's
a good book. As I said, I read it. I really liked it. These yellow books made by Springer are generally not too expensive. I think it's about $40. Okay. Course organization stuff. I'm assigning homework problems each day. There's not exactly a due date.
So what did I say exactly? Until the last class day, there are no due dates yet. It is to your advantage to submit a solution sooner so that you have more time to get feedback from me and to eventually find a correct solution before that problem section is covered on an exam. I will be happy to help you with your solution in my office or over email, but I will not distribute homework solutions to the class. Okay, so by default, if you do nothing, right, you're not going to get any solutions. Either you or your friend is going to have to eventually come up with a correct solution, right? And I will help you get there, but I want you to get there, not just I hand it to you. I put some office hours on here. Monday, Wednesday, 1 to 3. Tuesday, Thursday, 1 to 5. Basically, that's between my classes on those days. If you need to meet with me at another time, you know, please get in touch with me so we can work something out. I know, especially if you're working, your schedule may be, you know, not the standard student schedule. So I would like to be able to help you, not just here, but sometimes outside of class. I think tuition is, you know, paying for more than just the classroom experience. So if those office hours are not good for you, just send me an email and let's work something out so that I can find time to help you when you have trouble with the homework, or when you really don't understand something in the book and we haven't been able to address that in the classroom. And then, yeah, there's a few tests, right?
Yep, just two. The exams will be closed note and closed book. So
make this knowledge that's in the textbook and in your homework solutions, make it your own, right? Really engage with it. Spend time thinking about it so that I want to be in your head, right?
There's more little details about course organization, but I think I've said the essentials. Are there any questions? Yeah.
Is the final exam comprehensive?
It has to be comprehensive, so anything's fair game. That's a policy of the whole arts and sciences college, right? Yeah. Other questions?
Okay. Who's taken a course called Algebra, Abstract Algebra, Modern Algebra? Or maybe you talked about groups, rings, fields. Anybody done that? Some of you, yes, some of you know. So, the real numbers and the complex numbers are specific instances of something more abstract called fields. Okay. Another example is the rational numbers. Fractions of integers. All of these have some common algebraic properties. And in linear algebra,
although our intuition for vectors, we think of them as an arrow, right? So that's something in terms of two-dimensional space or three-dimensional space. So you have two or three real numbers that tell you that your components of your arrow.
It turns out that if you want to understand linear algebra, so matrices and linear transformations,
it's a lot easier if you bring in the complex numbers. Here's the short version of it. Multiplying complex numbers by I rotates the complex plane 90 degrees. All right. So if you have a linear transformation that takes all your vectors and rotates them 90 degrees, you can understand that and the structure of all such linear transformations better if you have the complex numbers. This gets back into eigenvalues, and we'll talk about those more later in the course. But there are just some things that work more simply with the complex numbers.
And when you try and do it for the real numbers, it gets more complicated. So there are two fields we use in this course, the reals and the complexes. We talk about fields, a field F, right? And this is in the book, too. This is, I guess I'll say it this way. So we're always either talking about the real field or the complex field. And we have lists, right? 3, 4, 5 is a list of three real numbers. In this course, I'm going to follow the textbook. I'm just going to use parentheses for my lists. I mean, some people, like I say, when I teach calculus 3, I use the angle brackets, this textbook is going to use the parentheses, so use the parentheses. The angle brackets will be for something else. They'll actually be, angle brackets will be used for dot products, actually. So later on, it really will help us to use complex numbers. For many things, especially early in the course, it really doesn't matter whether we're talking about lists of complex numbers or lists of real numbers. So whether F is the reals or the complex plane, F to the n is just the set of all lists of length n of stuff in F. These words are manual. Interesting little puzzle here of how to most efficiently use all three boards. Thank you.
Okay.
So, I'll say a little bit more about Fields.
Those aren't the only fields, though. I'll give you another example of a field.
This is a four-element field. It has an addition table and a multiplication table. It's a pretty funky addition table, though. If you take anything and add it to itself, you get zero. When I say it's a field, I mean that my two tables there, my addition table, my multiplication table, and my special elements, 0 and 1, satisfy this list of properties, right? And you know names for them. Associative, commutative, distributive. Identity, right? Or neutral element. Invertibility. So commutativity, obvious thing. I'm not going to write the that's going to be about the dots, right? We know we mean multiplication there. Even in this crazy table, you can check. These two crazy tables, if you kind of flip them about the diagonal, you can see it. They're commutative. Associativity, right? Okay, now you can't just eyeball that and check it, but it's kind of tedious, but you could really check it. Don't particularly recommend it. We're not changing the left to right order here, but we are changing the grouping, right? Which ones do we add or multiply first? And there's a identity, right? If you add 0, there's no change. If you multiply by 1, there's no change. And then we have the inverses. The addition operation is invertible. Okay?
So this one's a little bit trickier to say. So for each X, there is a Y such that they're additive inverses, right? They add up to the additive identity, which is zero. And you can also say that there's a multiplicative inverse, except for zero, right? So it's just this abstract list of rules. It's in the book as well. This is all section 1A stuff here. And you know these rules from algebra. The point is that there's a list of them, and it's a finite list. And there's one more I still need, that's the distributive law. But from this list, you can get all the other rules you need, basically. There's the distributive property, right? X times Y plus Z equals X times Y plus X times Z, right? I'm putting the parentheses there for emphasis, right? So all of this together makes a field axioms. Now, the interesting thing about the field axioms is that you can use them to prove a ton of other properties you know. For example, x plus 0 equals x. Are there any other numbers like 0 with that property in a field? Like, could I have another number where if I add it to x, it never changes x?
Yeah. Well, it turns out you can prove that there isn't. There's the additive identity is unique if you assume the other field axioms. And proving that is one of the kinds of things we do in this course. It's trying to
understand why some short list of assumptions is actually powerful. It actually tells us lots more. That's what a good set of axioms or a good definition does. You can get out more than you put in. So I can get a lot of stuff out of this.
So let me show you. Because I'm going to ask you to prove stuff in your homework all the time, so let's do a proof. Let's see what that's like.
Last board before I probably have to actually take some pictures and start erasing stuff. All right.
Okay.
That's the problem. What's your strategy for solving such a problem? The word show.
What does that mean? That means prove, right? Or argue, right? So the solution is going to be an argument. Think like a short essay, but there's probably going to be some math symbols in it, right? Okay. Okay, so I need to have an argument that should convince my audience that there aren't any other additive identity elements.
Okay. In a field. There's just that zero. Where do I start? Right? Well, you have to use all the stuff that's given in the problem statement, right? It's a field. Okay. What's a field? Well, it's one of these things. Okay, so I'm going to have to use some of those field axioms. Hopefully it's not so complicated I have to use all of them. But I'm going to have to use the field axioms in my argument, right? What's my goal? Zero is the only additive identity. I need to know what an additive identity element is. Right? Okay, so let's start a solution. Often I find it's nice to work backwards from the goal. Right? So I'm going to write down what I want, and then I'm going to try to get there. Okay? So, suppose, let's make up some number here, I don't know. So we want something like a zero, so I'll call it zero prime, all right? It's like some alternate zero, right? Okay, suppose zero prime is an additive identity. Let's go ahead and say what that means, right? We're not going to get anywhere in this argument if we don't even know what we're talking about. So when I say additive identity, I'm talking about that property up there. And if I add it to X, I always get X, no matter what X is. So you'll see this a lot more advanced math classes. The prime is probably not a derivative. It just means another one, right? And what do we want to do? Given some other additive identity, we want to show actually it's just a zero, right? So let's see that. This must be zero. Okay.
So, what have I got to work with?
I've got this equation here to work with, right? What I'd like is an equation like that. So it's a little algebra game. How can I get from this to that, right? If you've taken an abstract algebra course, you might have seen a proof that does exactly this. Okay. I'm going to have to use the field axioms to kind of turn this assumption into that conclusion. Okay. So, yeah?
Can we start off the same little sentence? For all values of x, there's a y such that x plus y is equal to zero.
Yeah. Well, let's see.
Okay. So for each x,
try using that inverse property. Okay, so for each x there's a y. So which x's do we want to apply that to? Let's see. There's two x's that there might be in this field, right? There's 0 and possibly this different thing, 0 prime. We don't even know if there's anything else in the field. I suppose there's 1. You could say something like this. 0 plus y equals 0 for some y. And I guess 0 prime, I'll use a different letter here to emphasize they don't have to be the same. Okay.
I was thinking that if x is an element in the field, then not for 0 prime, but for x, there has to be an x. There has to be a y for that x, such that the x plus y is equal to 0. If I do that to both the sides, then I would be left with 0 plus 0 prime is equal to 0.
Well, how do you know x and... How do you know that the inverse of 0 is 0 prime, though? I'm not sure how we get there. There may be something here, but I tried to solve this problem before class. I didn't solve it this way. There may be a way to do it using this, but I don't see it. But there are other things we could use. What about we use that identity axiom, right? X plus 0 is x. So the interesting x would be 0 prime, right? Looks interesting. What else have we got?
Could you also say that 0 prime plus 0 equals 0?
Let's see. If I could, then I'd be done. But, so let's make that a goal, right? Since we know that 0 prime plus 0 is 0 prime, it's now enough to show that actually 0 prime plus 0 equals 0.
Okay, that's working backwards, right?
I know that see 0 prime is 0, but 0 prime is also 0 prime plus 0. So if I want to get from 0 prime to 0, this can be my intermediate step. 0 prime is this sum, Now I just need to get from that sum to zero. Okay. So maybe this is getting us closer to a solution.
Okay. What other resources do we have? Besides the identity axiom and the inverse axiom. There's a bunch of stuff we haven't used yet, right? We haven't used associativity or commutativity, right? I'm not sure we're going to need any of the stuff that involves multiplication. I don't see why multiplication would come into it. So I'm guessing we won't use distributivity, but you've still got commutativity and associativity up there. We haven't used those. Maybe we need to use them.
So for example, if we use commutativity, we could switch around the order of the 0 and the 0 prime here. Right? So.
And there's another thing we haven't used at all. Our hypothesis, right?
Suppose 0 prime is an additive identity. So for all x, x plus 0 prime equals x. We haven't used that yet. Right? There's no way we're going to succeed if we never use that, right?
Because you're not going to prove that everything in the field is 0. So we're going to have to use this at some point. Okay. So I think
that we can complete the proof using two other ingredients, commutativity and our hypothesis. So if you'll forgive me, I'll just finish the proof up here, because it doesn't take much more room, right? Okay. So flip the order by the commutative property, right? We assume we're in a field. Okay. And we're not quite to 0 yet, but now we're going to use our hypothesis. Okay. 0 plus 0 prime is 0 by our hypothesis. Okay. The thing we assumed down here. When I said suppose, right? I introduced some arbitrary, possibly different than zero additive identity. Right?
Well, there we go.
0 prime is 0 prime plus 0. 0 prime plus 0 is 0 plus 0 prime. And 0 plus 0 prime is 0. We're done. And there's a, in modern mathematical notation, it's become this tradition. Started sometime in the 20th century, I guess. Put a little box to indicate you're done. The older tradition was right, QED, quod erratus demonstrandum, which is Latin for that is what was to be shown, right? So that's what we need to show. We need to show that 0 prime equals 0, and we've done it. Right? There was essentially three steps. Right? This thing here, with trying to use invertibility, clearly that was a no-go. It was promising, but it didn't pan out. That's okay.
Your first draft, our first proof attempt, can often have a lot of false starts, right?
Then you finally find a correct proof. Or later,
you find that your correct proof was longer than it needed to be. There's an easier way to do it. That's okay. Okay, so here we go. So we use the additive identity of zero property. Then we use commutativity. And then we used our hypothesis, right? So you could revamp this now, and you could streamline it, right, into a really short, basically you can make a one-line proof now. You could just chain the three equations together, right? It's really just, we just did three things, right? So that's how a proof is. In retrospect, oh, it's so obvious, right? But it was not obvious actually finding that chain of equations. Right? So, if you like something nice and clean, then after you discover a proof, then you can rewrite it in a short and sweet way. You could say something like 0 prime equals 0 prime plus 0 equals 0 plus 0 prime equals 0, where the first equation follows from the additive identity axiom, the second equation follows from commutativity, and the third equation is by hypothesis, right? So it becomes a one-sentence proof, and it looks like magic. How did they do that? Well, they fumbled around until they found something that worked, right? So let me get some photos. If you find that it's hard to both take notes and hear every word I'm saying, you know, then just don't take notes, and you can download my board photos because I'm going to put them on the website. Okay. So let's write a nice, clean solution now. I'll make sure that my picture isn't blurry, just in case. It's not blurry. Okay. All right. Okay. Okay. So here's the cleaned up version. Let's remember what we did. We had this. But we're going to write it in a different order. We're going to put the 0 prime on the left side. And that was the first thing we did. And the second thing we did was we switched the order. And then the third thing we did was we used our hypothesis. Right. So, here's some justification, right? So our identity axiom, which is said, so if we added 0 on the right, it doesn't change it, right? it doesn't change x whatever x is. So I had x be 0 prime. That was the identity axiom. Then I used the commutativity axiom to flip them around. And then I used the hypothesis that 0 prime is also an additive identity, that if you add it to the right, it doesn't change what you're adding to. Now we've got a cleaner proof, right? It looks really clever this way. But you may have to fumble around before you find something really nice, right? More pictures. Yeah, I think be a light switch for the board there.
If I can figure that out.
Yes.
Oh, much better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because if you go back to the inverse, x plus y equals 0.
Yeah.
Then we have rearranged it to solve for x and then put that into the identity and the hypothesis.
Okay. This is an alternate solution. Okay, so let's see if this can work here. So you're saying,
okay, so
is that, you're saying,
so you, we started off with x plus 0 prime equals x, right?
Okay.
So if there's a by inverse, then we have to have an x plus y equals 0.
Okay. So you thought of what I couldn't think of 10 minutes ago, right? You thought of how to use the inverse one. Okay. Alright, I like this. This will also be a perfectly valid solution. Alright, so now depending on the context, sometimes people might want you to show, you know, every single step. If the point of the exercise is to actually use the field axioms, then let's use them and not skip all the steps. Alright, okay. Okay, so we're going to... So where are we going to do this? As you said, we're going to...
By inverse, then there must be an x plus y equals 0.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
So then I rearrange that so that I have x equals 0 minus y. Yeah. X equals 0 minus y. Right, then was I...
Well, okay. So now you're adding the... So now you're assuming the inverse of y, right?
I'm assuming the inverse of y.
Okay. Well, what you need for that strategy there to continue is you need to prove that the inverse is unique, right?
Yeah.
We don't write y, we write negative x because there's only one additive inverse, right? So if you're only allowed to use the field axioms, then now we've got another problem. We've got to prove that the inverses are unique, which you can do, but that makes some extra work. Well, I think though we could still salvage this. How about this? I see another little game we could play here. Let's use this equation here. Okay, so let's call this 1 and 2. Okay? Okay? Let's combine
1 and 2 as follows. Okay? So I'm going to take the x plus y, okay, and I'm going to replace the x with x plus 0 prime. Oh, I'm missing something here, aren't I? Well, there's... Okay. I need the... Okay. Yeah. Yeah, 0 is x plus y. That's what I was missing. 0 is x plus y, and then I replace the x with x plus 0 prime plus y. And now I can do a little more fumbling around here. So we can use the associative property. I think. If you... Yeah. Maybe I can just cheat here. Save space. Okay. And what I want to get is, see, I'm fumbling around. Let me use commutativity, actually. See, finding the proof is never as pretty as actually writing out the final proof after you've erased all your false starts. Right? Okay. I'm going to... See, the x and the y can cancel out, right? So if I can bring the x and y together, I can make them go away, and there'll be nothing left but the 0 prime, and then at the other end of the chain of equations will be 0. Okay? So now I use associativity. Okay. Okay? And... x plus y is 0. That's by 2. Okay. And, well, let's see. If I use my hypothesis that 0... Well, if I use the identity axiom, this would be 0 prime. So I don't want to use the hypothesis. I want to use the identity axiom. Okay. Now we're done. So there. A different proof. Okay. So I'm glad you chimed in there. What's your name?
Ramon.
I like that. You found a second proof. And it really was a different argument.
Well, it struck me the gentleman that mentioned that he had
proofs. Yes.
Please go straight.
Okay. And what's your name?
Angel.
Angel? Mm, okay. Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't see how to use the inverse earlier. I just need to... I guess I could have thought of it earlier, but I didn't. Oh, well.
Yeah. Okay.
So, that's the kind of thing we can do in this class. Is actually do a proof... And if you do, you know, you could do dozens of proofs like this where you could prove lots of rules of algebra just from the field axioms, right?
You can work your way up, you can prove the binomial theorem by induction and on, right?
So you can get out a lot more than you put in.
It doesn't seem like we got out much because, you know, there's only so much time in one lecture and I just did one little problem. Am I going to go this slow every time? No. I want to get you comfortable with approaching these kinds of problems. So I took this one pretty slow. Right? Not all of you. I'm not going to assume all of you have done this kind of a problem before.
But that's the game. You have some resources. In this case, field, so that gave you the field axioms, additive identity, you had to know what that meant, and then you had a goal, show that 0 is the only additive identity, and so you
you try and combine your resources step by step and hopefully get to the goal. Or sometimes you work backwards from the goal to your resources. As long as it all is a valid chain of reasoning in the end, then you've got a proof.
Some older stuff here. I need to
photograph two.
There's other things you can say from section 1A.
Key things are addition and scalar multiplication. Alright.
So, if I have a list of n things, and I have another list of n things, then we do the obvious thing. We add the first thing in the first list to the first thing in the second list. We add the second thing in the first list to the second thing, the third thing. No, I'm falling asleep. Okay. Well, eventually we get to the end of the list, right? Okay. And then there's abusive notation. So you have n zeros in a list, but the book will just write one zero for them because that is an additive identity. If I add a 0 to the x1, and then so on until I get to the last one, the xn, and I add a 0. Well, assuming this is the real or complex field, this is a real or complex 0, right? So it's an additive identity, so yeah. So this is, you know, the identity property, the identity axiom for the field F, right? And this is how you use the identity axiom in the field F to prove that, yeah, you've got the identity axiom for the field Fn. Well, it's not a field. Yeah. It's going to be a vector space. Unfortunately, there's no good way to multiply lists of n real numbers or n complex numbers. It won't be a field, but there'll be something in the next section 1b, right, giving a list of axioms for vector spaces, and among them is additive identity, right? There is a zero. And then the other thing you do is your scalar multiplication, right? If you have something in the field, say C, right? So we have a way of multiplying a number by a list of numbers, right? Okay. So these are just the definitions, right? And this is probably familiar stuff, right? You know about scalar multiplication and vector addition. Nothing exciting there.
And I just thought I'd have you do a few proofs. So let's see, what did I... I don't know, do I want to inflict all four of these exercises on you? Let's see. Some of this stuff... let's skip number 8. Okay.
Okay. So... okay, so... look at exercises 10, 11, and 16. See if you can solve those.
Exercise 10 says find, and so you don't have to give a proof for number 10. Just find the x that it wants, where x is a four-dimensional real vector in this case. Exercise 11 asks you to explain why, so that's essentially the same as prove, right? And then 16 is show that, so that's another, you know, prove it, right? So 11 and 16 are proofs. 10 is just a little computation. Make sure you understand the definitions. Okay? So, as I said in the syllabus, there's no due date per se, but the sooner you submit a solution, the sooner you'll get some feedback. Okay? And you can revise and get more feedback as many times as necessary. Right. And that takes us to 7:14. Okay, so I'm not sure if 75 minutes twice a week is the optimal, you know, scheduling, but I don't decide the scheduling, so is what it is. So thank you for sitting with me for all this time. Any questions? Yeah.
Would you like the board written with pen or pencil?
Either way is fine. You know, I understand, you know, if you're literally erasing, you know, then it might be easier for you to do it in pencil. As long as I can read it, you know. But no, pen or pencil is fine. If you want to type it up, that's fine too, but that's not required. Okay. All right, well, have a good evening.